everybody. This is Greg Stewart and my co-host, Dean Kennedy.
Hi, how are you?
Coming to you from our Masonic Central podcast. It's August 10th, 2008. This is our sixth glorious episode of Masonic Central, and we are doing tonight something a little bit different than what we've normally done. Tonight is our table talk night, which is a comfortable way of saying we're just going to kind of round table conversation and see how things are going with everybody and kind of talk about masonry. So first, how are you doing tonight, Dean?
I'm fantastic.
Great.
Thanks.
Great. We have a few guests that are up live with us that are joining us. Tim Rice is back with us tonight, and we have a host of other folks that are listening and will be contributing in. And, you know, tonight we kind of had a few things we wanted to talk about. I had a few things to bring to it, but I was suggested in some others, and I think that's a much better way to go. I was going to treat tonight a little bit like a symbolism night, but I definitely one of the things that was brought up before the call is to talk a little bit about what makes lodges interesting and exciting. And I think that's a great conversation to have today. You know, it's funny, one of the things that I wanted to mention is just we're mid-dog days of summer here, and so this is probably a strange time to talk about it because most lodges are dark. Are any of the guys listening, your lodges active this month or this summer?
This is Tim Bryce down in Florida, and we go back next Monday. Tomorrow night is our first stated meeting back from summer recess.
Wow. Wow. How about you?
We're dark up here, except my lodge had a barbecue a couple nights ago, and I couldn't go, unfortunately. So, guys, if you're listening, I'm sorry I didn't make it, but there was a pool party across the street, and it was closer to walk.
I know, you know, surprisingly, a lot of the lodges here in Southern California, they continue to meet. There's no real lodge darkness that goes on. I know a lot of lodges in the Midwest and around the country go dark in the summertime because it's too hot and that they don't have air conditioning necessarily, but for some reason here in SoCal, they don't ever seem to close down. We're always meeting, whether or not we have 20 guys in it or 50.
Well, you know, really, it's the worshipful master's choice as to whether he wants to go dark or not. At the last lodge I was at, it was the worshipful master would ask the craft, what do you think? But the one lodge we were at was just really sitting on the edge. So we stayed, you know, we didn't go dark at all during the whole summer at all, which was unusual.
Wow.
While everybody else was dark, those guys who wanted to sit in the lodge, they'd come up and sit up in our lodge. So it worked out well for us.
Yeah, that's great.
I think one of the reasons we go dark is because we have very few lodges that have air conditioning. So
yep.
It would make it very uncomfortable in the summer.
I can imagine. You know, interesting. I know we've been off for a few weeks, so for anybody who's trying to catch up on some of our old podcasts, we've been dark ourselves for the last 3 weeks and catching up. But in that trip, it was a lot of miles, 2,000-plus miles on the road. And interestingly, we did a lot of small community driving. So, you know, from one highway to the next, we'd take these little, I guess, turnpikes, if you call them that, and pass through these little towns that had these little itty-bitty lodges. I was pleasantly surprised at seeing them, but I can imagine they looked, you know, older buildings and smaller communities that are probably built just like that without a lot of air and the same sort of thing within communities that probably go dark. You know, a lot of Grange buildings, too. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Grange, the fraternity, and then the Order of, what was the other one, the Oddfellows and Rebecca's. Surprising how many there are out there. You know, we don't see a lot of that here in L.A. still.
Oddfellows are really dying out our neck of the woods. There was one chapter we have up by Tarpon Springs, and I don't know how many guys they have left over there, but they're just on the way out in Florida at least.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I wonder if there's a lot of cross membership. Have you ever known anybody in within any of your lodges that have ever been members of Oddfellows? Or
I had a secretary that was a provincial, some sort of a provincial head guy for the Oddfellows.
I never knew one personally. My grandfather in New York State was an Oddfellow and a Mason.
And there's some Orangemen too that are crossed up here too. So
yeah,
they don't. They're not as outspoken.
Here in Naples, this is Jeff Carter down in Naples, Florida. We actually have some members who are from the UK, and they're members of the what did you say, the Orange Men, I believe that's.
Yeah, the Orange Lodge.
That way.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Orange Lodge. Yeah.
Interesting.
But we're dark just once. We actually have meetings twice a month. regularly, but during the summer, or this summer, actually, our master asked us, you know, what did we want to do, and we decided to go dark just one of our meetings of the month, and so we travel and go visit other local lodges around in the area, so it's kind of cool to go around.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah, we've had some fun. We've had some fun doing that.
That's not a bad idea. Do you guys, and when you do the two meetings a month, do you guys do everything you would normally do from degrees to just stateds, or do you have special meetings for the other staff? In a given month?
Yeah, we pretty much do the same stuff. We just decided this summer, and like I say, it varies from year to year, as Brother Tim was saying. The Worshipful Master usually will just ask the brethren, what do we want to do? And we decided to do some traveling and be dark one meeting out of the month. And
just kind of get around a little bit.
Yeah, we visited La Belle Lodge, a smaller lodge up north of here, and Fort Myers Beach. And
it's a lot of fun visiting those lodges, isn't it?
Everglades City. Yeah, it really is neat to see the different ones. As a matter of fact, when we went up to La Belle Lodge, they had a big mural of the Weeping Virgin symbolism up on their wall, and we kind of got into a conversation about that. And so now I'm actually putting together a PowerPoint about all of that symbolism and how, you know, why it was put together and what it means and all that kind of stuff. So it kind of spurred a little research project to do some education stuff.
That's great. You know what, Jeff? Actually, that might be neat if you brought it to a call eventually. Maybe that's something we could talk about. I'd be curious to see what you come up with. That'd be pretty cool.
That would be great.
That'd be pretty cool.
And
it's stuff just like that. Just with taking that time off in the month and being able to travel around, I think you know that dovetails perfectly into what we were talking about in the sense of doing something that makes regular lodge attendance a little bit more exciting. Dean, you mentioned that your lodge was having a barbecue.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see, stuff like that, that's great. You know, how often do you guys allow to do things like that, outside of the regular meetings, I guess?
Well, we do it a couple times a year. We'll have a barbecue. We went out for a dinner. The whole lodge went out to when we say a whole lodge, my lodge up here is a lot smaller than what you guys would have. It's not like 500 guys like in the States, you know. We have my lodge is a very small lodge. It's 50 guys, but you know, 25 to 30 of them go to lodge or, you know, on a meeting. So, you know, it's a bit different than what you guys have. So when we gather to go to these things, it's not like you don't have to reserve a whole conference, you know, a conference room or anything.
You know, I find it interesting how there are a lot of brothers out there who don't want to visit other lodges. They think, you know, Freemasonry is within the four walls of their lodge. I've always enjoyed visiting other lodges because you always pick up something new, you learn something, and especially in my district, before I became Worshipful Master, I made a point of visiting all the lodges in my area just so I got an idea, you know, what they were doing, what kind of problems they had, and also what things they were taking advantage of, you know, and it really had an impact on what we do. I got to make a plug, though. Saturday, October 18th, Amelia Lodge, which is just north of Jacksonville, Amelia Island, is putting on their annual Fort Clinch Civil War degree. They have an old Civil War fort out there, and it's laid out. It was built by Freemasons, too. First, the South started working on it, and then the Union took it over. And they do the whole degree inside the fort in both Confederate and Union uniforms.
Wow.
And it's right on the border for Georgia, so we get a lot of Georgia brothers to come on into this thing.
Brother Bryce, is that the one that's at Sunbury? Is that where that is? I'm trying to remember.
No, it's on Fernandina Beach.
Oh, it's Fernandina Beach. Okay, I'm from Waycross, Georgia,
right,
which is right there near.
And I can't recommend this enough. These guys put on a great show up there. Beforehand, they have a shrimp boil, and good brotherhood. You go up and see the park, and you can look it up on the map. You know, it's fabulous.
Cool.
Type of fort, and it's a Tyler's dream because there's a moat around this thing. But they go on in, they put on an excellent degree. They'll get anywhere from 200 to 300 people show up for this thing. And you sit in lawn chairs around there, and they do a great job. I've been going to it for 8 years now.
That's really
And
cool.
There's a great place for the wives to go to while we're inside the fort, you know?
Huh. That's awesome.
Great.
It's fun to go visit these places, and you always pick up some ideas along the way.
Wow. Greg, can you make a note to charge Tim for $5 for on-air advertising, please?
Are you kidding? Actually, I wish I was closer. I could probably go on myself. That's great. You know, it's activity like that that I think, it's hit or miss around the country in some places. You know, we do things like that here. Here it tends to be in California, that is, Southern California. There seems to be a lot of Grand Lodge receptions and breakfasts and things of that nature. Because we don't have the history necessarily behind it that, you know, this is the reenactment of it. Here, those things tend to just sort of fall flat, I think, because not a lot of people can relate with it historically. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Southern California. So, I mean, what do? We go to the beach. So it just seems like there's a little bit less of that activity going on, which is a shame, you know. But our lodge, my lodge in particular, we do a lot. We have rallies, car rallies, movie nights, and the like that. But there doesn't seem to be a lot of inner lodge activity, which seems to be one of the things that I'm trying to work on, at least in different conversations, and trying to say, hey, let's try to do something like that. How long have they been doing that reenactment degree, Tim? Have they been doing that for a real long time, or?
Quite a while. Yeah. I know that. And they make a good buck at it with the shrimp oil beforehand. And they've picked up so much money over the years that they added on to their lodge building and put on a separate rec hall onto it. Right. So it's a win-win situation all the way around. Everybody has a great time, good brotherhood. And like I said, they pack them in and brings in two states. You have people come on up to this thing.
Wow. Yeah. And it's probably like this. Go ahead.
I was just going to say the outdoor degrees are really cool. I know I've been to the sand pit. It's an outdoor degree they do here in the southeast, and then another one at a place they call the quarry. But I haven't been to the one that Brother Bryce has talked about, but that sounds really cool, though.
The one I would really like to see, and I've heard a lot about it, is the brothers out of Oklahoma, the Indians, you know, put on a special Indian degree. And they go all over the world to do it. And there's a special newsletter you can subscribe to. I'd have to go look it up. And they tell you where they're going to be performing next.
Wow. So it's almost like a traveling troupe.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They get around. They
wow.
were over in England not long ago.
That's great. We occasionally get those here. Our Scottish right here, and I'm sure they do around the country the same thing. We've got some traveling degree teams here. But I've heard some of those stories with the Indian degree teams and even some of the Civil War ones, just they're phenomenal productions.
Yep.
That's really great.
We got a group about 8 years ago from the UK came on over, and they exemplified the EA Fellow Craft and Master Mason degrees at different nights. And it was interesting to watch how they lay out their lodge, which is a little bit different than how we do it, and the work. It's all fundamentally the same, but it was just interesting to see a different, you know, way of presenting this type of stuff. Oh,
yep.
And they have a great dinner afterwards, too.
On that Indian degree team, I went up and interviewed the head of the degree team and the director and the secretary. That newsletter you're thinking of is called Trestle Board Smoke.
Yeah, that's right.
And I went up and interviewed them, and I did an article for them, which can be found in Masonic Magazine, which is still available by e-download. Mm-hmm. It was fascinating to talk to these people for a couple of hours about their degree team.
I think his name was Charlie Cote or something like that, wasn't it?
Yes, Cote.
C-O-T-E.
C-H-O-A-T-E. I also was a member of a degree team in my own lodge, the Colonial Degree Team, the Paul Revere Colonial Degree Team, which did the third degree in colonial uniform.
The other one I would like to see, too, is up in Montana. If you ever studied the founding of Montana up there, it's really based on masonry. And there's a long story on that, which I don't want to get into now, but I wrote an article on it, 3777.
Yep.
What they have is a ghost town, Bannock, in the southwest, where Freemasonry helped settle the town. And they still have, in the ghost town, the old original lodge. And once a year, they go in there and they open up the lodge in the ghost town.
Wow. I'm getting feedback through somebody here, guys. I mean, I have to do some witch hunting for a second.
It might be you, man. I'm not hearing anything.
Then 2 weeks after that, they have one up in the mountains, you know, where they first opened lodge. back in 1868. And that would be a really great one to see, too.
Yeah, I can imagine that. You just take all the guys out there and do that. That'd be a phenomenal thing to be a part of.
Well, what Montana's done is interesting. They set up two historical lodges, which any brother, you know, in the United States can belong to. And what they do is they get money from that. They fix up the lodge in the ghost town, as an example, and then they hold these degrees once a year. And it's really fascinating, you know, what they're doing up there. And I think it's a win-win situation. Again, they're making some money, and you get some notoriety, you know, for joining these historical lodges.
So, Tim, along this vein, I mean, what you've brought up in a few spots are some lodges have nice events, others have degree teams that are really sharp and on the ball. So one thing that I came up with in my little head here, along with a couple of my brethren locally, is that perhaps lodges should focus on doing one thing well, whether it be their ritual or their social program or maybe an event that they hold every year, like a big golf tournament or something, and just focus on doing one thing really well. What I see a lot of lodges doing is that when I travel around is a lot of things not so well, you know?
Right. Well, you get notoriety for doing something very well.
So whether it be ritual or education, pick one item, one area that your lodge will be really good at, and then hopefully another lodge will pick up the slack on another side, and I think it would make your districts interesting, you know, and give them some flavor.
Yep.
That's just my idea. No one needs to take my idea. Some people do, actually.
This is Jeff again. I've always thought it would be neat if we had more lodges, you know, around that did education type stuff on different nights. And like if we have a new candidate that goes through the EA and then somebody in another lodge, you know, is presenting, say, you know, an education piece on symbology, that you could actually take them to another lodge and visit and, you know, and get some education on the degree that they just went through. I know I've heard some brothers from the UK say that they actually do stuff like that over there. But there's
much more research over in Europe than there is over here, and you're absolutely correct. I think we should do more than just catechisms. Do more research. Do some on the lodge history. We have one guy down in Clearwater who does a whole thing on geometry that he studied on, and it was fabulous.
Right. Yeah, I crave sometimes, you know, more of the substance than the form sometimes.
I think to your point, Jeff, I think that it's starting to change a little bit, you know. And
I agree.
You know, change anywhere, it never happens everywhere all at once, but you know, just
with
little steps and from, you know, from websites and blogs and everything else, just to hear that sort of clarion call and take that back into the lodge, I think that and that's definitely a positive that is starting to kind of come around. I think that just people are, just like you were saying, you know, I would like to learn more, and sort of picking up that mantle and saying, well, all right,
mm-hmm.
let me learn more and I'll bring it back on in.
Yes, the young guys are looking for that. I see that everywhere. And when they don't find it, they disappear.
You're absolutely right, Brother Tim.
I have a friend in Massachusetts, a past master, a good friend of mine, who formed an esoteric club across district lines, encompassing about three districts, pulling men in, brethren in from many different lodges in three districts. And because it covered, you know, such an area, they were able to get a pretty good crowd and do some great things. And, you know, they always had a guest speaker and they always did something, you know, some study book review or study thing, as well as some good fellowship.
Yeah.
I think that's a good idea.
Definitely so. Yeah.
Yeah, when I sat in the East, I always had a guest speaker every stated meeting. We also did Master Mason exams down here in Florida. I got them through that, and also Lodge Officer training. But Masonic education is an important point of the success of a lodge, in my opinion. Those people just go in there and read the bills, you know, and do the minutes and yada, yada, yada. It's boring. People go to sleep. But if you challenge them to think and to, you know, go through some of this Masonic education, they find it interesting. They get engaged. They start coming back.
Yeah. I just recently started attending Cypress Lodge here a little over about a year ago, I guess now. But right after I started attending here, I've always been an avid reader about Masonic history, you know, and just eating all the books up that I can get. But it was the next meeting after they had done an EA, and I brought a big, you know, just a like a kind of a poster board sheet with me, and did a little bit on the point within the circle and about truing the square and stuff like that. And I had all of those new brothers come up to me afterwards and just, you know, say that's what they were craving. You know, they see these symbols around and they don't know what they mean. And, you know, and they ask some brothers and they don't know what they mean.
Yeah.
I'm sure that they've heard it at some point, but that is really, they're just craving that kind of stuff. They really are.
I'll tell you, when I did late last year, I know it was a called communications we had. It was on Masonic education, and then the Worshipful Master wanted me to lead it. So I set up a game of Jeopardy. I divided the craft into two parties, and they sat on different sides of the lodge. And and I gave them all these offbeat things. I hit Masonic protocol. I hit the lodge history, Grand Lodge history. I also hit the history of Freemasonry and so on. And then I had a rapid-fire round at the end, and I got to tell you guys my final question, and I stumped them. One guy finally figured it out, though. And I said, now, if you hit the buzzer too soon, okay, you're going to lose, you know, so many points. But if you get it, you're going to win the game. And I says, what was Hiram Abiff's wife's first name? Now, you could hear a pin drop in the lodge. People sitting there, what? Who's that? You know, and I said, it was Mrs. Hiram Abiff, you know. And it was a great way to end the thing, you know.
That's funny. You know, I'm curious with having done all this, then what were the results of the lodge? I mean, I obviously the answer is people loved it, but you know, at the time of doing it, were people receptive when you got up, or was there a collective groan of, oh, God, here we have something?
No,
or are people genuinely
you know me,
that sponge?
I've got that reputation, you know. Bryce is going to bring something weird out here, so let's see if we can play along with him, you know. What you got up his sleeve this time, you know? But I'll tell you, the other thing is the Philalethes magazine. I will go to that quite a bit and bring up some articles and review some things that are going on in that, or if there's an interesting story going up. But it's always important to give them a diet of Masonic education in the lodge.
Yep. I know just in the last few months, I've started the old table talks. Remember the old table talk bulletins that came out of the MSANA?
Yeah.
They're a little bit long. They're probably a little bit too long for most meetings, ranging 15,
they have
almost
some good
20
stuff
minutes.
In them, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And with a little bit of truing back up for a modern perspective to it, I've started to try to roll those out short of just trying to write something relevant for every month. You know, it's hard, I think, sometimes for a lodge to look at something and say, you know, what would be great this month to roll out, or how about this month? You know, with everything always changing topically, you know, what's interesting one month may not necessarily be relevant another.
Right.
I think that's where a lot of folks step off and miss that.
We also did a planning seminar, and we did that at the beginning of this year, and I asked them five questions. You know, I said, what are the problems as you perceive this lodge has got right now? And how do we address these things? And I also asked them to define what is Freemasonry. And we came up with a consensus answer, and I was very surprised by the answers, too. I asked everybody to scribble something down on paper. And that was very productive. Man, we had everybody talking. Then they say, well, what do we want? And then it came out, more Masonic education, more social events. Okay.
Wow.
We changed our curriculum then. We changed our schedule for the rest of the year.
And how did it go from there? Is there a general sense of more happiness and more interactivity?
Well, you know, a lot of people, you know, when you go into these lodges, and I keep going back to micromanaging, people saying, well, this is how it's going to be, whatever. You've got to engage the craft. You've got to manage from the bottom up. You've got to get their input. Let them talk. Make them talk. Make them think, you know. And that, to me, is – and once you get them talking and participating, you're off to the races.
Yep. I know I've noticed that so often in the education and symbolism classes that I teach in Lodge that it's the same sort of thing. You can come into it and with even just a real short paragraph of this is what we're going to talk about tonight, and it's almost like opening the cages to pent-up dogs, you know, horrible analogy, but you know what I mean? But you throw it out there and you just start getting them going with it and they love it. I mean, it's, you know, one idea coming here will spawn a 10-minute tangent on something, but, you know, a relevant tangent to actually talk about it. And you're right, getting people to talk about it really engages them.
We've been always very active in our community and what we do down in Dunedin here. And the big thing that we're going to try and get into now that school's starting to open up is we're going to this elementary school that we've been working with, and we're going to try and bring out the West Coast bike program, the bicycle program. And,
is that the one where they're giving the bikes to children?
For education, yeah.
For grade schools?
For
okay.
reading, yeah. And I thought that was a fabulous idea. And we're going to go talk to the schools, and we're going to get a bunch of bicycles and offer it there for kids, encourage them to read and so on.
Yeah. I just want to bring in one guy in. He's asking how to get introduced. Millennium Freemason, you can talk now if you want. Introduce yourself. Come on right in.
All righty. This is Nick Johnson. I'm from Minnesota. And as you can tell, I'm pretty young. So, and actually, for me, when I joined in, one of the funny stories that I've got is, you know, I had no idea any of the symbolism. And I said, brother, can you explain this? And, you know, he's one of the learned guys. And he goes, and I'm looking at these two holes up in the back of the lodge. And I'm like, is that where the missing pieces of some ancient temple were? And he says, no, that was where we used to put the movie projectors. And I'm like, amazing.
I was going to mention your blog. You have a new blog too that I read that you're bringing in some technology and stuff in that you talk about every once in a while as well.
Yeah, just a little bit. I'm really trying to figure out ways to get more guys my age into the lodge because, you know, I know we're all joining, but it still feels a little lonely. So.
How you doing, Nick? Nick, this is Greg. I'm glad you made it. I know we kind of bounced a few messages back and forth about it, I think, hadn't we?
Yeah.
About the podcast
so.
Today?
Yeah, I
right
think
on.
So, yeah. Yeah, it was
so,
just, yeah, just running out of Target and going, uh-oh, what time is it?
you know, it's like all the more reason for why lodges go dark. You see, we're all too busy with summer. I'm surprised we're not all barbecuing or something.
Oh, yeah. Nick, I got a suggestion for you, you know, for your webpage, if you want to put something out there. The younger Masons all like to see multimedia type of presentations in these podcasts, and just come up on your page and put, you know, direct links to things like Masonic Central and all the other stuff that's out there. If you go to our website, which is Dunedin192.org, there's a section called podcasts, and there's a whole bunch of things in there you can use, and young guys like looking at that stuff and listening to, you know, the various presentations.
Exactly. Well, and what's really interesting that I found is, you know, I was sitting on the message boards and, you know, we used to use slides and lectures, and all of a sudden, you know, I was like, well, why don't we use a PowerPoint? And there's actually a very good PowerPoint out there. I'm not sure what the website is, Hiram something, but apparently it's by Alexandria Lodge, and it's almost like complete copies of these perfect slides that they used to use for their lectures, and they're beautiful.
Yeah, and you have the two spots for the projector too, so you'll do just fine.
I was up in Ohio once, and I watched them do a fellowcraft degree, and during their lecture, they had a beautiful DVD running to explain everything. It was gorgeous, a very first class, and made a very good impact on the candidate.
California has something like that coming out. They're just rolling out new DVDs. I've yet to see them, but I knew some of the brothers that were working on them. And I knew they were going at them with the best of intentions, and I have no doubt that they turned out really well. It's whatever it takes. I think you're absolutely right, Nick. If it reaches a new audience, then it reaches a new audience. You know,
if you're
holding up postcards or...
Well, you know, the evolution of the tracing board, huh?
Oh yeah. Well, and that's the thing is, I memorized that 30 minutes of the MC lecture, and it's like, well, I need some visual aids to help myself out.
Yeah. Well, here's what I'm waiting for, guys. I'm waiting for the new technology to come in. I want the prompts for the ritual to come in on BlackBerry. And when that
Hey, Nick, let me ask you a question. Just how old are you?
26.
All right, young Mason, so on. What do you want to see in Lodge? What do you want to get out of Lodge? What would make Lodge? What makes Lodge meaningful to you?
Good question.
Ooh, the big question. The big question. Let's see. Well, I think Masonic education is one of the major aspects because, you know, I came in and I had read a few of the books. I wanted to be surprised at the end, so I'd skip chapters from the books just to make sure I wouldn't know. Yeah. So, but, you know, I would say that education and just asking questions. I found that just going in and asking one of the older members, can you tell me about this? And I've been in conversations hours upon hours learning about different aspects of the craft, and it's just amazing. I haven't even started in York or Scottish or Shrine or any of that just because I'm still learning craft masonry, and I've been in for 2 years, 2.5, and it's just amazing.
Do they have anything in there about the history of your own lodge?
Actually, yeah. My dad is – I actually – interesting story. I brought my dad into the lodge, and so he's right now researching the first worshipful master of the lodge that I'm from.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's – you know, we have some pretty good records. It's just trying to organize them all, but
– yeah.
Yeah, but I'm not really sure if sitting on the history of Freemasonry is the major, you know, I know that we talk about Benjamin Franklin and George Washington, but I sometimes think that perhaps we sit too hard, you know, on these old vestiges of Masonry instead of thinking towards the future sometimes. And I don't know if that's, you know, something other people feel, but...
Boy, I'm glad you said that.
Go ahead. Have something there, Fred?
Yeah, Nick, this is Fred Milliken from Dallas. I get two Masonic education pieces from Grand Lodge, Minnesota people. One is called Mirlik by Ed Halpus, and
mm-hmm.
the other is Sinosam by Neil Neddemeyer.
Yep.
Both of them are... Both of them do some really good stuff, so it sounds like you got a really nice Grand Lodge up there.
It's a fantastic Grand Lodge, I have to say, yeah. And most worshipful brother Niedermeyer has a fantastic resource that he's actually worked on, and I've actually incorporated some of that, because right now I'm actually junior warden, so, you know, the second I got into the lodge, they said, hey, you want a job? And I said, no, sure, okay.
Nick, I assume that you've been to Paul Bessel's site.
Yeah. So, and
okay.
I've been pulling in all these resources. That's the one thing I've noticed is the internet is really, you know, for whatever reason, the internet creates a perfect way of gaining as much knowledge as you can about just about any subject. You know,
that's something good to talk about right now, Nick, and I think this maybe something that I'd like to talk about is I think that there's a division in Masonry right now between two generational gaps that one doesn't want, you know, doesn't look to Masonry on the web and doesn't participate in it, and another one that looks there for stuff,
yeah.
that, you know, for the younger generation, and I think you're seeing that a little bit. And you know, this is Greg. I think that's just to what you're saying, Dean. I think that speaks just exactly what Nick's saying, is that you can find all this information on there, but it's a question of trust to it. You know, and that maybe it is from a younger perspective that, you know, it's you know how to read it and take it with a grain of salt rather than to look at it as like any published word is absolute. You know what I mean? So you read something on Wikipedia, you know that, all right, it's probably fairly accurate given how it's created, but it may not be wholly accurate. So, and I think that's where that disconnect comes, is that one part, and I can say this just generationally from my own family and how they talk about, you can't trust anything on the net. You know, it's that same sort of thing. It's an understanding of how that information's put on there.
You've seen that Stephen Colbert report about that, right? Wikiality, where Wikipedia is truth by consensus. So, you know.
Yeah.
Well, but you know, ironically, in some ways, and I hate to say it, but in some ways, that almost becomes the case. You know, and of course, I mean, you can check it. You know, facts are facts. If you know, you made 10 baskets versus one. But when it becomes down to, like, you know, belief consensus, if it's, you know, something, if an action were right or wrong, it really does come down to a consensus. You know, it could be a group of people that say, oh, that is a good thing or a bad thing. You know, and I think that's where that sort of nebulous, vague gray space of the internet comes in. That you just kind of suck in all this information. Go ahead.
This is Jeff down in Naples again. I totally agree with you, and I think one of the things that we've got to really teach our especially our new younger brethren is I know that Brother Diamond did a podcast about critical thinking on Ex Oriente, which I thought was just excellent because I actually did I did a little spiel in my lodge about that as well when I was actually doing another education bit, but I talked about critical thinking, and that might be a good subject for Masonic Central is to do something further on that and talk about, you know, how you go about when you come across information, whether it's on the net or in a book or wherever, you know, that you know how to think critically and to ask questions and to find out the answers and find out if it's really something that's you know, true or not.
Interesting. That's a good idea. I think that's a very good idea for something future. But I think you're absolutely right, Jeff. I think it's you have to sort of develop that ability. And that's where, again, back to that whole generational thing where, you know, believing necessarily what you read firsthand versus having that discernible eye to it on the net. I've come across all kinds of erroneous stuff on here, and even tonight with someone early before we started podcasting and just posting up some questions that it seemed like it was leading a little bit spurious. You know, there's always a point counterpoint to everything. You know, here's a good and here's a bad, and that's where you really have to start being able to separate the wheat from the chaff, I think.
Yeah, I think, Greg, I always question everything when I get a pop under for emote icons, trying to sell me emote icons. That's usually my barometer.
I think that the internet, though, is, I mean, I think that's where we're going to see a lot of the newer brethren looking to find out about Freemasonry, and that our websites for our lodges really should. You know, should be using that tool, because I think a lot of the new up and coming Masons are going to go to the internet first, and they're going to put in where, you know, the city wherever they live and Masonic Lodge and try to find out something. You know?
That's right.
Yep.
That's really right.
They look.
Now, I go back to what Dean was saying. I call it the difference in generations, the difference between analog and digital generations.
Absolutely.
And the digital generations, they understand this, and they're also very hungry. They're thirsting for knowledge.
Yep.
The analog generation just doesn't understand that, and that's when you come up with these goofy rules to say, no, let's take off these web pages. You're not allowed to talk about this or that on the web.
Yep.
It's just a matter of the analog generation just doesn't understand it.
Well, the reality is that people that are looking for Masonry Google it, and now there's a fight for real estate, as Greg and I talk about quite frequently. If you're not up on that front page and you have an anti-Masonic group up there, there's an issue there.
Yep, yep. They'll trump the traffic right out from underneath you. Yep.
Yeah. Will gets the grease.
one of my biggest beefs with it has been the wealth of Masonic knowledge that exists in some of these libraries and the degree to which none of it's been digitized or is made accessible in any way, short of plunking down right inside one of those libraries. And I know there's value in that, and that's really important, but it just seems to me, you know, even as I open these books, they're just filled with all this information that no one's probably looked at in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't know how many of the brothers listening with the lodges that they have and the libraries that they have. At my lodge, we barely broke our library back out. Just in the last year, and books that had been boxed up for 10 plus years.
When I did the inventory in my lodge, there was a big library, and it was all sitting in boxes or locked up.
Yep.
Wow.
And that's sad, you know.
Well, that's one of the things I'm just about to do at our lodge at Cypress is to our worshipful masters asked me to kind of look through the library, and he wants to create like a learning center. Type area at the lodge, so I'm looking forward to getting with a couple other brothers and trying to get all that stuff together and get the library back out.
And that's one of the being used. That's one of the beautiful things of it, though. I mean, and even just in the encyclopedias, it's 3,000 pages of just, you know, tangential text talking about the early beginnings of Freemasonry, modern Freemasonry definitions. It's a treasure trove of information, and sure, it's written for, you know, probably a generation of 100 years ago, so it's not very language friendly, but I think just still as the text exists, just to be able to dig into it, you know, and really sort of...
Yeah. Well, but me and those books, they don't have the URLs in them to go to for more information.
No hot links.
Well, here's maybe a good idea for you know, carrying books like that. I know I have, you know, at least 10, 15 books that I've bought. You know, perhaps each brother in the lodge writes down the books that they have and just create kind of a switcheroo book club where, you know, someone says, hey, you've got that Who's Afraid of Freemasons book? Well, here you go. Here, take it. You can read it. I mean, that might even be, you know, just as good of an idea as, you know, instead of just centralizing all the information, perhaps, you know, create a wide network in which people can pass books around.
Yep. So like a book exchange, absolutely. Or even a book club just to have books to talk about every month. Absolutely.
One of the places you can get a lot of the older books, e-books, is Phoenix Masonry. Where, you know, you can get the complete Builder magazine, all the issues, Mackie, and, you know, some of the great authors of yesteryear, as well as a few new ones, and, you know, just open it up and read it right on the computer.
Yeah, absolutely. I know I've fallen back on that a lot of times for some research and just having to pull it out if I didn't have a book on hand. There's a great wealth out there, and just even to develop a program, something that synthesizes some of that information into a message that you can convey out and teach people. I know just in my activities in doing the symbolism class that I've done that quite a bit. You know, but it just becomes a lot. There's a lot of information out there, and I think that the synthesis of it that is difficult. I think. I mean, they're there. It's just...
I just want to step in here for a second. It just occurs to me one thing. We're talking a lot about a new you know, ideas to bring to your lodge, to bring energy back into the lodge and good ideas. But just remember that every idea needs somebody to stand behind it to actually follow it through, and it's not always going to be the master of the lodge because they're overwhelmed usually with, especially with it's their first year. They're overwhelmed with just trying to learn the work and everything. So
absolutely.
So take it upon yourself to help him out, him, or for other lodges, I guess that I don't recognize that it were her, but I had to slip that in. That's the idea. Is there has to be doers in every lodge, and that's really where lodges make it or break it. Is that if it's just the master trying to push everything through, he's gonna struggle like you wouldn't believe. But if he has a good number of guys that are willing to take a ball and run with it, that's what makes a lodge. And with a few good ideas, it zings.
Let me take it a little bit further than that too. That I've seen too many worshipful masters come on in. And they want to micromanage everything. Nothing happens without the master's approval on the thing. And I, you know, when I took over as master, I came up with true committees and I empowered them. And I said, hey, do your thing, you know, just tell me what's going on. That's all. And as soon as you empower them and set them loose, it's amazing what they do. But, you know, if they're going around saying, well, I can't do anything without the master's seal of approval on the thing, nothing happens.
That's true. You know, oh, go ahead.
I'd like to get back. I don't know, was it? It was me.
Yeah, you're on
I'd
the
like
list.
To
Sorry, Fred.
Okay, I'd like to get really back to, I think, one of the biggest point you made tonight, and that's the generational gap. And it's true that, you know, you have a bunch of newer Masons that are Internet savvy, and you have a bunch of older Masons that don't even use the Internet at all. They don't even know what a computer is, but... For that reason, I'm really much more in favor of a sort of inner circle or a group that would like to do this type of education and in-depth analysis of Freemasonry outside the Tile Lodge room in more of another night or a Saturday or whatever, in a casual venue with a breakfast or a pizza night or something at the lodge or at another place where they could just sit around in dungarees and you know and boots and an old hat.
Yeah.
That's a great idea, Brother Fred. I was just going to say real quick, this is Jeff. We have a brother that I've been a couple times now, and he I'll get his first name, but he's over at Fort Myers Beach Lodge, and he holds kind of an impromptu education session, and I'm going to be going to the third one that I've attended. It's going to be coming up on the 13th, but. And that's what he has just a subject that we start on, and then it just spurs, you know, us to talk about all kinds of different aspects of symbology. And it's just, it is a blast, and there's like 8 or 10 of us in there, and it's very casual, and we just have an awesome time.
That's great. That's great. Well, I know in our mileage, we do the same thing. We don't do it on a meeting night. We do it on an off meeting night.
Right.
And,
yeah.
We get a variety of numbers. Some months we'll get one or two guys. Some months we'll get 7 or 8, 9, even 10 or 11, 12.
That's awesome.
Well,
yeah.
And you know, concerning the generation gap, something that I kind of find kind of interesting is actually there's more similarities than there are differences. And in fact, I kind of find that the generation Y, the generation I'm a part of, and the generation of the World War II generation actually have a lot more in common than they have in different, because you know I grew up playing team soccer, team everything. We did everything together. All of our projects were together, and I think that's another part of the fraternity that we're missing is the idea of the fraternity, the idea of that, you know, that we're a fraternal organization and we hang out with each other. And I think that's one of the strongest and most important parts that we can do is actually try and push get those brotherly ties together just as much as, you know, seeking the esoteric or the mysterious or just saying, you know what, hey, why don't we come over and have a barbecue or something like that? Because I think that's something that a lot of brothers my age would love to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, just a lot of close association like that. Yeah,
I
think you're totally right. I think that's one of the values of Masonry is that it does cross generational gaps and it does bridge the fellow at the end of the spectrum with the fellow that's at the beginning of the learning curve. And I think that's one of the biggest values of Masonry that I've had, you know, is being able to sit around with these guys and joke around with guys that you would not have any connection with, being, you know, such as yourself, Nick, you know, 26 or whatever, you know, you wouldn't meet up with a guy in his 80s, you know, going to the bar or something. You just wouldn't do that, right? So this really helps. So I think that's one of the values of Masonry, and I think that at least that I found something that I benefited from and that I found interesting.
Let me bounce an idea off you. This is something I've been planning with our former secretary, who's now 90 years old, but a really good guy. And we got talking one night, and he said, why don't we have a scavenger hunt? A scavenger hunt, really, what we do is we break the brothers up into a series of teams. Maybe we do it on a Saturday. And we're going to send them all over Dunedin, you know, where we're at, and let them look up all the historical points of, you know, significance that our lodges had in the area. And I put out clues for them to go. And when it's all said and done, they end up at the secretary's house, and we have a barbecue over there.
Oh, that's cool.
I'm going to send my treasurer down to see you because he's in Florida for 3 months of the year, probably down around your way.
Tim, I think that's a great idea. That's one of the social activities that my lodge has. It doesn't tend to have such a historical influence as much as it does just entertainment as it involves families.
Yeah, the idea is to have fun, you know.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, absolutely, to be able to bond. And I think that's an important aspect of it. You know, that a lodge without that doesn't have that fraternity. It doesn't have that intermixing of generations like you were talking about, Nick and Dean, and just, you know, that the activity, that group activity to do stuff.
And
you know, we get,
I found that, yeah, and I found with having a mentor, because I had a mentor. We have a mentor program, and I had a mentor who was, I think, in his 50s, and you know, he and I got along. We were bouncing ideas off of each other about Masonry. I learned all the ritual from him, and you know, I really feel like that brought me closer into my lodge than it, you know, drove me away. And I think that's what it is that you have to know the expectations, but also kind of take these new guys under the wing, no matter what age they are, and say, let me help you out with this. You know, I know this is a new experience for you. You might have done these things in college, you know, fraternities, but this is like no other fraternity you've ever joined in your entire life.
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, I'll tell you what, guys. I hope that you all will do a roundtable like this at least ever so often, because I think this is awesome what we're doing right now.
Yeah, right on. You know, it's as programming goes, you know, and originally Dean and I and with Fred, we were kind of bounced around a little bit of what to do, and this originally was in our planned format for it, and you know, just like symbolism in the lodge, or just even that fraternalism in the lodge. I mean, this is just like that. So I think we'll absolutely do this again, Jeff. This is a great idea. I'm actually
very cool.
Enjoying this quite a lot. I'm enjoying this quite a lot. But I mean, we're not over yet. We still have time. Let's not
wrap it up yet. Actually,
yeah.
We have 10 more minutes to fill. Okay.
Good night, everybody. don't forget to tip your waitress.
We'll be here all week.
So guys, just as a point here, if you're a new master and a lot of us have been in that position, and you're looking for things to do, what would you say if we created a resource, a central resource where people could go for ideas, for activities and events for their lodge? You know, I mean, we've been sharing a lot of ideas here, and I don't think, you know, other than bumping across them when you ask for them, there's not really a place that a new master can go to online. I mean, I'm sure there's a book out there somewhere. I'm sure that one of us on here has probably published a book for the new master.
I have to say, just as long as Tim and I have talked, and I've known Tim and worked with him and his contributed work to publish, Tim, you are like a dynamo in coming up with ideas like this. You'd think that you've been a master of a lodge 10 times over with the strength of ideas that you come out.
Well, again, I've been very fortunate to be around the block a few times, you know, and I just said, why don't we change things, you know? It's a matter of just having attitude. Small example, when I went to the East, you know, down here in Florida, you're typically expected to wear a tuxedo or white dinner jacket or something like that. My year, I wore a Cuban Guevara shirt, you know, and all my officers did, too. And people started coming and said, wow, that's cool.
Nice.
Well, I'll give you another one I heard from Georgia Lodge they did, which I thought was a fun evening. At the start of football season, they told all the craft in advance, and everybody was expected to wear the jersey of their favorite team.
No kidding.
Yeah, so all
the
officers,
actual lodge
meeting, they're all wearing like Atlanta Falcons uniforms.
So they had no taste.
But, you know, the thing is, they had a great time.
Yeah.
And you got to make it different. You got to throw a curveball at them every once in a while.
Yeah. And maybe that's just it, just in really even describing what it is that they're doing. It's not so much that it's a breaking tradition, but it's just approaching it in a different way. You know,
yep.
It's putting a fresh coat of paint on something that's everybody's familiar with. You know, you make it a little bit more exciting.
Well, you know, one of the best pieces of advice I got from a past master is Tim. He said, never be afraid to try and fail. He says, you're not going to bat 1,000 all the time, you know, but just put your best spin on it the best you can and just do different things and try different things. Get the craft, get them to wake up, you know, and okay, if you fail, all right, knock it off. But I know some guys who are so scared of trying anything that the lodge stagnates.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, so often I think it takes energy to do it. And if you expend a lot of energy worrying about what other people are going to say about it, rather than plotting that course and then going for it, I think that's where that's where there's so many shortcomings with it. You know, you just worry about what, you know, oh, I can't do this because they're going to say that and this group's going to say that, versus just doing it. I think, you know, even dovetailing with the conversation, I think people would love to see it just for the sake of seeing it. You know,
right.
Even if they come in and say I don't like it, they're still going to like the fact that they can come in and say I don't like it.
Let me tell you two other things we did during my year. One of which was a black light degree, and I took all the lights out of the lodge and put in all these black lights. Now,
oh,
you got to remember, this is back when I had these Cuban Guevara shirts. And we came on in. Boy, were we lit up! It was interesting. And we did it around Halloween, so it was perfect.
Wow. How did it go over? Did it go over fairly well?
Oh, it was great. Everybody loved it. The organist was fabulous in it, too, you know? I mean, all the lights were off. We just had the black lights on.
Wow, that actually sounds like a lot of fun. You know, it's that not having that fear. You know, something interesting that I've been exchanging emails with Bob Davis out of Oklahoma. I don't know if anybody's familiar with him, but he's a executive secretary out of Oklahoma.
Yeah,
and a very smart guy, very smart man. And just in talking to him about, you know, these activities of doing things. It's in our communication, something he said to me was just, you know, the changes that you want to make with the lodge and an organization come in steps. It's not a overnight thing, and you can't approach it as an overnight thing, as an overnight idea. It's a long-term plan. You have to figure out where you're at and where you want to get to and what the steps are in between, and then work on it slowly. So doing something like that about, you know, wearing different outfits besides tuxedos, or doing a black lodge or black night, black light night, things like that, that it takes some time, that you just have to do it, try it and see if it works. And if it doesn't, then figure out why it didn't and try something else.
Yeah. The other one we did, we had a night of, we call it Spam Fest. And so, yeah, I brought out the legendary can of Spam, you know, and I had to give a contest to people. I said, let's have who can come up with the best Spam dish. And everybody, of course, rolls their eyes and say, oh, God, Spam. You know, they said, oh, that's terrible stuff. But then they'd all pull me aside. Tim, I've got this dish of Spam. Oh, my God, it's killer. We had Spam enchiladas, Spam tacos, Spam casserole, Spam stew. I did Spam cargo, which you got to see it to believe it. We had a black and
white. Oh, God.
And we had all kinds of stuff. And you know what? Everybody had a great time just putting it together.
Wow.
Regular Monty Python night there, huh?
Well, you know, I don't think that's a bad idea at all. You know, even if it seems like you're not taking it serious, I think that's taking it serious. You know,
that's awesome.
Having fun with it.
As long as the food inspector doesn't show up, you're okay.
Well, you know, another thing that has an impact on the lodge, too, is music. And, you know, we've got a lot of organists out there, and thank God if you got an organist, man, take care of that guy, and I believe in that. But a lot of these lodges don't have organists anymore, so I put in a CD system, and I've had all kinds of different types of music being played, you know. But I got to tell you, my favorite one, I was sitting in the West that night. I let somebody else sit in the East, you know, it was a call degree, and I had the controls for the CD. And when we closed, I closed the lodge with Woolly Bully by Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs.
Oh my goodness, how funny. You know, and all right, Tim, so subsequent masters following you, did they follow suit? Did they continue this tradition, or did they
we did the black light degree for a few years after that, and we did the Spam Fest for several years. And what we did is we had like a little cash prize, you know, for it. We get like $25 to the winner. Oh, the winner would always donate it to the mite box.
Yeah.
You know, it would be that kind of thing. So that went on, but then I left and went back to Dunedin Lodge, and that all kind of fell apart.
It's too bad, just energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it's something I guess important to note with this is that ideas like this, I think institutionally with any organization, ebb and flow, that sometimes at one in one place it'll kind of manifest and it'll have, you know, 5-6 years of fun like that. And then it might fall back and move to another lodge. You know, just like you said, you left that lodge and moved it back to a different one, and it just seemed to kind of fall away. I think that's true of anything, a church, an office, a Boy Scout troop, you know, any sort of organization that has a collection of people together doing that sort of thing, that these things come and go. Just it's all in the leadership.
Greg, that's a good point. I just want to make one note here. A lot of times when we're looking on the Internet, we're reading about Grand Lodge, this Grand Lodge, that. After today's show, it should be quite evident that if you have, you know, if you're having a good time in your lodge and you're doing stuff that's interesting in your lodge, it doesn't really matter what's going to happen at the Grand Lodge level. The Grand Lodge level is there for certain reasons, but if you were to just read blogs alone, and, you know, and we all read blogs and we all participate, at least most, the majority of the people here do, and most of us have blogs. But you know, we get caught up in the Grand Lodge politics, but really, the excitement and the rejuvenation of Lodge itself is going to happen at the local Blue Lodge, individual Blue Lodge level. And that's
absolutely.
What happens to take place.
And even more poignant, Dean, that it happens at the individual basis. Each one of us,
yes.
Even the guys sitting on this call, each of us bring that attitude to the lodge and can contribute this stuff. So
mm-hmm.
So if it's our time in the East or even just, you know, a master's year that we may have, we're the ones that do this. So you're absolutely right. If Grand Lodge is, this is one of my favorite things to say in Lodge, if Grand Lodge were to evaporate tomorrow, it would still be on our hands to conduct a lodge. We
That's
would
correct.
Still be the purveyors of this institution with or without
mm-hmm.
us. So I think that's so true. That's so true. You know, it's a great thing. I think we have a lot of potential and a lot of power in what we do. So
I agree with that.
I don't know. Anybody else have anything they want to bring to this evening's table talk? I know we're now at the top of the hour, so do we miss
well,
anything
one,
here, Aika? Go ahead, Fred.
One last thing. Yeah, one last thing. I know that a lot of Grand Lodges are doing some serious leadership training. I mean, with real good leadership training programs, sometimes by an outside vendor, and I think that these are starting to pay off.
I would like to see more of that.
That's true. Yeah,
unfortunately, guys go through the chairs way too fast.
Right. Yeah. Well, and where I am, they actually pretty much push a 3-year start planning now. This is, you know, you've got 3 years to get this going. And so I've actually already got plans for when I'm in the East. And so it's one of those that, oh, got a plan now. What?
It really is. It's something that with the long-term plan, if you could get a 3 to 5 year window of what you want to do, it'll make things so much easier. And I'm saying this just working with guys who are headed to the East. I haven't even wanted to take that step yet just because with family and regular life to be able to dedicate to that. But the longer term, and I'm finding this, each of these guys that I talk to and trying to help them put together programs or just manage programs, the more time, the better.
Yeah. Well, and that's exactly it, because I was sitting as senior steward for 1 year, and all of a sudden the incoming worshipful master says, hey, you want to be a junior warden? I said, don't you mean junior deacon? And he's like, no, junior warden.
By the way, the only thing, Jeff, I would say is you're going to miss senior deacon. To me, senior deacon's the best seat in the house.
Oh, yeah.
Amen. Amen.
Yeah, I'm still memorizing also.
Well, no, I agree, Senior Deacon's the spot. Greg, let's wrap this up and just remind the listeners that if you downloaded this, the show stops now. But if you come on live with us when we tape these things, which just go to the MasonicCentral.com or log into TalkShoe, you can come on in while we're taping this, and you can participate in the after-hour show, which is where all the fun stuff happens anyway. And we'd love to have you come participate.
That's where the booze flows.
Okay.
What's next week's program?
that mic was cutting off at just the wrong times.
coming
what's
up,
that, what's the next week's program?
Next week we are off air. I have a prior engagement coming up next weekend. My lodge is hosting a booth at a concert. Next week's our last concert, so unfortunately we don't have anything scheduled. Our next upcoming program is Sunday, August 24th, 6 p.m. Pacific, and we will have Jennifer Emick on. For those who don't know Jennifer, she is the About.com alt religion guide and a very knowledgeable individual. Another web worker like us, and she does a lot in the way of talking about the alternative religions, but she's got a lot of information on and ideas on Gnosticism, Hermeticism, and early Masonry. So it should be an interesting conversation. Yeah, we're going a little bit deeper into the esoteric, and also joining us, it's not a man talking about it. So should be an interesting show. Should be an interesting
show. We try to bump things out around here.
Yep. I think it'll be very good. Join us. It's again August 24th, and then even coming up after that. Let me go back to my handy dandy calendar here. We have
the 31st.
31st tentative is for Paul Bessel. We've had to do a little bit of maneuvering for the timing, so it's for now he's the 31st, which runs us then into September, We have Adam Kendall from my home state, Grand Lodge, coming in to talk about some of our programs going on and some of the exciting things that we have going on in the state. And then towards the end of September, we have Tom Jackson for the 21st. I have to call him back, though, because he left me a message, so we'll see what's going on there. But if anybody has anybody near and around the 14th, if they'd like to book them, let me know or let Dean know, and we'll see what we can get on there.
And eventually, Greg, I'm going to have to train you to take over this board for a couple of weeks there, I think.
Absolutely.
Just in case.
That's right. Coming up in October, Dean has a baby due, so it might be just me. In fact, I'm going to put it on my calendar right now for the 11th. Dean's baby due. Just so I know and I can remember. But that's what we have coming up. And then as we get into October, we have Stephen Defoe coming in to talk about his new book and Jessica Harlan to talk about her past book. So should be interesting. We have a lot of neat things coming up. It's very exciting. We're having a good time with this and a lot of good feedback. You know, a lot of you guys listening have all been telling us good things about it. So very much appreciate it.
Okay, Greg. Let's wrap this up today, and if everyone wants to just hold on here for 1 second, we'll get to the post party show, and we'll see you then. Let's do our tag out.
Absolutely. I guess just to hit everybody, thanks for everybody who's listened. Tim, thanks for being a part of it. Jeff, Nick, thanks for being here, and Fred too. I know Fred, you were a little bit late coming to the party, I think, but I'm glad you made it. Very glad you made it. And all the other listeners, Palmetto Bug, thanks for being here. And thanks for everybody who listened to us. And this is Greg Stewart. Let me just give a quick disclaimer that the opinions of this podcast represent our own opinions and don't represent the opinions of any regular or irregular Masonic Lodge, Body, or Grand Masonic Lodge. And this is Greg Stewart and my co-host,
Dean Kennedy.
Dean Kennedy from Masonic Central saying...
Travel
light. Hey, we're close.
Man,
thanks, everybody.
I tried to slow down that one. Great. All right.